out. Nerevia, young Nathan tried to say. Not you, Nerevia said. I want you inside, in more ways than one. You are incorrigible, Narime said. You aren't even his champion yet. And no, you weren't inside. He's rock hard. Nathan's responsive, but even he wouldn't be at full mast without help. Narime glared at him, and his younger self winced. Personally, the current Nathan liked the attention, but handling the attention of multiple women was new to his younger self. Vala had only caved to the constant pressure of his beastkin champions a few months earlier, and Narime was a newcomer into his life. The two women continued to bicker and argue. The result of this argument was a frustrating one. At some point, the young Nathan would slip away and join Vala in his room. Then again, Nathan hadn't seen his original champion for a long time. Maybe an erotic dream about her wouldn't be so bad. But he hated his past self for refusing to simply accept the attention he was receiving and take control. He wished he could say something like, "Why don't you both stay here? I'm the bastion, aren't I?" Suddenly, both women fell silent. They looked at Nathan oddly. Then the pair grinned and sunk to their knees in front of him. Their tongues ran along each side of his shaft, saliva dripping onto the floor. This wasn't how his memory went, which was probably a sign that this dream was no longer playing out as he remembered it. Nathan reached out with his hands and pushed both women against his crotch. They moaned and suckled against him, their eyes looking up at him with expressions of ecstasy. He ran his fingers through Narime's silky hair and fluffy ears as she swallowed his tip with her mouth. A moan escaped her lips, a moan that sounded a lot like a certain cat girl in Nathan's life. He woke up, vision hazy at first. Something warm and wet was wrapped around his prick. Moans reached his ears, along with slick, wet noises. When his vision cleared, he saw a very enthusiastic Fae clinging to him. He was in bed, and she lay naked along his legs. Her cat ears flattened against her head as she lapped up the pree that dripped from his tip, and her tongue ran along his entire length. Ordinarily, this would be a normal occurrence. Fae had a very healthy sexual appetite for a beastkin. Being woken up by her riding him or lapping at his crotch happened most mornings after letting her share his bed. But three things differed this time. The first was the time. It couldn't be later than 2 or 3 in the morning. The moon was still out, and everything was pitch black. Second, it wasn't Faye's turn. Another naked figure cuddled up to Nathan, her arms across his bare chest and head nestled in the crook of his neck. Sen had spent the night with Nathan after a vigorous session of exercise. The two women normally had no issues rotating with each other in Sunstorm. Finally, Faye's expression was warped with pleasure. Her eyes were glazed over, her face flushed. Drool oozed onto Nathan's balls as she licked and sucked at him. Moans escaped the cat girl every few seconds, and she twitched with pleasure at his touch. Nathan had a solid idea what was happening. The fact that the room smelled as though he had been having sex with Faye for a week straight sealed the deal. Faye's rutting had finally begun. He had the medicine to suppress it, but this was the first time he'd seen it in action. Plenty of experience with Beastkin in his original timeline allowed him to identify that this was probably the first occurrence. He'd deal with the consequences later. For now, he needed to settle her down. The easiest way to do that was to indulge her until her libido calmed down and her brain thought about something other than mating. His fingers tickled her ears, and she moaned around his shaft. With just a little coaxing, he pushed her against him. Her eyes curved, and his entire length vanished into her mouth. He tickled the back of her throat while he groaned. She bobbed up and down rapidly, making loud slurping noises and pleasuring herself at the same time. Heat burst from him, and he crushed her head against his crotch. She moaned against him, even as he flooded her stomach. When he popped out of her, she focused on sucking up every drop. She almost went cross-eyed with how hard she stared at his cock.
"What's going on?" Sen mumbled.
She shifted against his body as she awoke. Then she squawked.
"Fee!"
It took only moments for Sen to scramble for a place at the table, her tongue fighting for a share of the prize. Her sex hovered in front of Nathan's face as she straddled his torso. The two women assaulted him from both sides. The magic that Kadria had used to remove his refractory period was still active.
"You're not supposed to do this on my night," Sen muttered,
pushing at Faye. The catgirl ignored the other champion and continued fighting for licks of Nathan's shaft. He held back groans as they fought over him. Or over a specific part of his body, really.
"She's rutting, Sen," Nathan groaned out.
Sen paused and looked back at Nathan.
"I thought you had pills for that."
"Not until she started, like she has right now."
He groaned again as Faye took the opportunity to swallow his tip again.
"Hey!"
Sen squawked as Faye stole a march on her. She pushed Faye off Nathan's length before immediately swallowing it to the hilt. Realizing that she needed to lick something else, Faye moved to Nathan's balls. He groaned again, pleasure rapidly rising within him as they jointly enjoyed themselves. His fingers found Sen's sex, and she squirted as he entered her. A muffled scream rumbled around his length as he tried to match her rhythm with his fingers. Nobody said anything as the room filled with squelching, squishy noises. Sen's juices poured over his chest. He reached his climax from her bobbing along his length and shot rope after rope down her throat. When she pulled off him, gasping for air, Faye slurped up the remains that dribbled down his shaft. Both women kept lapping at him without rest. He realized this could go on forever. Faye had nearly infinite stamina, and the rutting would only make it worse. Sen tired easily, but she had been training herself and was competitive. He needed to switch things up. A small scream escaped Sen as he picked her up. Faye simply smiled as Nathan pushed her down on the bed, her fingers continuing to explore her own nether regions. Soon, the two women pressed against one another. Their glistening lower entrances faced him, and their chests rubbed together. Faye's hefty breasts stood out more, swallowing Sen's buds in their mass. Sen glowered up at him. She was no stranger to this position.
"You're not expecting me to kiss her, are you? I do that with Cho, but you realize that's different, right?"
She was referring to Sunstorm, using her true name.
"If you try to kiss Faye right now, she'll bite your tongue off," Nathan said.
Sen blinked and stared at the catgirl beneath her. Faye made no motions and simply stared dreamily up at Nathan with glazed-over eyes.
"Right, the rutting. She's hyper-focused on you, isn't she? Wants those kittens,"
Sen giggled.
"Going to give her them?"
"Not any time soon," Nathan muttered.
"How cruel," Sen said. "So why sandwich us together?"
"Because it keeps her in check and gives me better access to this place," Nathan said, reaching out with his fingers. Sen gasped as Nathan's fingers pried open her ass. Light flared around his fingers as he used magic to lube up.
Although his shaft was fairly slick, it was far from enough for vigorous exploration of Sen's depths.
"You enjoy this way too much," Sen gasped.
She lay flat against Faye, staring up at him with lidded eyes.
"I don't hear you complaining."
"You've been stretching me out for weeks now. Plus, I cleaned myself out for last night's session. Double dipping should be fine," Sen said,
refusing to admit that she wanted it.
Nathan pressed his tip against her rear entrance. Sen pursed her lips, her body pressed against Faye's and slick with sweat. Then he slid inside her tight ass, and she moaned, low and long. Her eyes rolled back as he bottomed out in her and reached a point of hard resistance fairly deep. As he slid back out, she let out shuddering breaths.
Good, Faye mumbled. So good, Sen said. Fuck, you need him to do this to you, Faye.
She'll kill me if I do it right now, Nathan said with a laugh. Rutting was about mating, after all. He kept his pace to long, slow movements at first, but started to speed up whenever Sen urged him. By the time he approached climax, her face was buried in Faye's tits, and her voice was reduced to a constant, muffled moan of pleasure. Nathan filled her stomach from the other end than he had earlier, his voice echoing within the room as he climaxed. Sen's rear gaped as he popped out of her. It gave him a great view of the creamy filling he left inside her. She stared up at him with glazed eyes and a half-open mouth, drooling onto Faye's breasts. Another round? He teased.
No, she murmured. I won't be able to close back up if you go again too soon.
He chuckled and cleaned himself off with magic. Faye began to whine, so he attended to her as well. By the time she came back to her senses, both women were drooling pools of his seed all over the bed. That was great, Faye said, as they toweled off after the shower. Sen was taking a little longer, given she had more to clean out. I'm glad you enjoyed it and appear to remember it, Nathan said, but I think you need to take some medicine now. Faye pouted.
But it was fun. Can't I keep doing this?
He ruffled her hair, and she snapped her teeth at him. Your first rutting will be erratic. Once you've settled into a routine, it can be planned around. But if we don't give you the medicine, I'll never know if I can rely on you as a champion for months. Nathan gave her a serious look. And as much as I love you, Faye, I also need you as my champion. So take the medicine, and we'll find a way to settle this naturally once things calm down. Faye nodded slowly.
Okay, I get it. But I really want the natural solution. Sex has never felt that good.
Then she grinned.
Plus, I learned that you're doing something to Sen that you're not doing to me.
Given the way Faye's hands were wandering across his crotch again, Nathan suspected this might be a sleepless night. Chapter 11.
I'm impressed you managed to organize all of this so quickly, Narime said, waving a letter in one hand as she spoke. I expected more bureaucratic issues, given what I've heard about the inner workings of the Empire.
I am the right hand of the Emperor, and if the Empire couldn't organize negotiations with a major power at short notice, then it would have ceased to exist long ago, Leopold said dryly.
They were sitting in a meeting hall and going over the current state of the negotiations. Narime sat next to Nathan, and her tails often brushed his shoulder as she waved them about absent-mindedly. As her tails were sensitive, he wondered if she was doing it intentionally. Seraph and Leopold sat opposite them. The other dozen or so seats were empty. A map of the region was stretched out on the table between them, and a few sheets of paper lined its sides. Pots of coffee and tea were kept at a distance. Servants darted in to fill cups as necessary, and they occasionally stared in terror when somebody topped up their own cup. Nathan found that deeply amusing. During their first week of work, most of the beastkin tended to be lackadaisical when it came to attendance duties. Most beastkin villages and tribes didn't have any form of hierarchy, with even the elders being expected to take care of themselves. Only the old and infirm could expect care, and even that wasn't guaranteed. Horsebeastkin especially had a rather harsh view of old age, which made sense given their nomadic roots. An old beastkin was a slow beastkin, and a tribe couldn't afford to constantly slow itself down for the sake of a few sacks of ancient bones. But beastkin were incredibly competitive, and that's how the heads of staff learned to push them and train them. If a beastkin thought that Nathan was being lazy because he didn't get his own food, then Nathan would have to get his own food. But if a beastkin thought that it was a point of pride that she was bringing Nathan his food, and that she was underperforming the other servants if she didn't, then the game changed. Although that made them pushy. One of the wolf girl servants stepped up and grabbed a pot of coffee a moment before Seraph did. The champion smiled up at the wolf girl.
"I'm quite capable of pouring it myself."
"Allow me, champion," the wolf girl said, undeterred. She pulled the pot from Seraph's hands and filled her cup. Seraph gave Nathan an annoyed look as the wolf girl trotted back to her position. The guards held their hands over their faces and tried not to laugh.
"If I didn't know better, I'd think they ran the castle," Narime murmured.
"They do," Nathan said. "I simply live here." The fox gave him a curious look before placing a letter on the table. "We have an agreed location to meet, and arrangements are being made to ensure an adequate supply of food and water in advance. But we're missing the most important part," Nathan said, moving the topic back to the main event.
"Tanius," Seraph said.
"He hasn't bitten, even after the letter from Anna," Nathan said.
"It doesn't matter," Narime shrugged. "Every regent other than him and Corvel have agreed and are either sending a representative or have nominated another regent as proxy. That letter from Countess von Clare tipped the tables. The signature of an archduke and the authority of Emperor Gortal cannot be ignored."
"You say that, but Tanius is doing exactly that."
Seraph's cup splashed as she gestured at Narime.
"And given he arranged this war, we can't really rely on any negotiations without him. He'll stall anything we agree on and launch an assault the moment spring ends."
"Agreed," Leopold said. "We need to push more aggressively." Narime's tails curled around her, and she opened her mouth to reply. Whatever she was going to say was lost as a series of loud noises echoed from outside. All attention turned to the doors that led to the exterior hallway. The guards looked at each other before slipping out of the room. Raised voices made themselves heard through the gap in the doors, before vanishing once they closed. Leopold and Nathan looked at each other. The old man nodded at Nathan. Standing up, Nathan gripped his sword and walked toward the door closest to the noises. The servants crept toward the far side of the room. There were only two doors leading out of the room, and that left a safer side of the room for the unarmed beastkin to huddle. A few steps away from the door, Nathan paused. The shouting was right outside the door. He couldn't hear sounds of fighting. What was going on out there? The door burst open, and a woman rushed in. Nathan didn't recognize her. Thick blonde tresses that fell below her shoulders, a lean but curvy figure, and dark brown eyes that locked onto Nathan's. The woman narrowed her eyes at him, as if trying to work out if she should recognize him. Funny that Nathan wondered the same thing about her. She wore tight-fitting pants, a frilly red top that left nothing to the imagination about her less-than-impressive bust, traveling shoes, and an elegant jacket that could probably pay all of Nathan's guards for the week. This was a standard traveling outfit for young noblewomen. No noble would be caught dead wearing it in public.
"Your Imperial Highness," Leopold said.
His chair clattered to the ground as he shot to his feet. A moment later, he dropped to one knee and lowered his head.
"What are you doing here?"
Nathan's eyes widened in shock. This was Princess Alice Arengar, the granddaughter of Emperor Gortal and Charlotte's old friend? A moment later, Nathan realized what was happening and dropped to one knee like Leopold. "Stand up," Alice said, waving a hand in the air. Her beautiful face formed a scowl. "I thought there'd be more of you here. Where's Grandpa?" Leopold rose to his feet. He nodded at Nathan, who then followed suit.
"Your Majesty is in the capital, as always. Archduke von Milgar is presently busy with preparations for the war with Trefome," Leopold said.
"I thought we weren't continuing that." Alice's scowl deepened. "And I heard that Grandpa was involved in this."
"Did you now?" Leopold asked.
"I did, no thanks to you. Although I never would have poked into what you're doing if you hadn't sent your champion to Falmir randomly," Alice said, smirking. "I'm not sure if you're getting old, but you kind of gave yourself away."
Leopold had done what? Wait, did that have something to do with Nathan telling Leopold that he knew about Alice? Was he the cause of the princess's sudden arrival?
"I am, in fact, old, Your Imperial Highness," Leopold said, his voice laced with amusement. "I imagine it's quite noticeable."
Alice looked between Nathan and Leopold. "Really? Because I don't see much difference between the two of you. Does that make both of you old men?" Nathan tried and failed to hide his wince. At the table, both Seraph and Narime giggled. Alice smiled at him. "You're Torben's son, aren't you? I believe we met many years ago when you were still Nathan von Straub." Alice curtsied. "I am Princess Alice Arengar, although I'd prefer if you called me Alice."
"Yes, Your Imperial Highness," Nathan said automatically.
"Hmm? I'm afraid I didn't hear you correctly," Alice said, her smile brittle. Nathan remained silent, but looked at Leopold, who shrugged. "Well, now I know why you like him, Uncle," Alice muttered, glaring at Leopold. "At least Nerevia calls me by my name. She's been a treat while I've been visiting Falmir."
Several things hit Nathan, one after another. The first was the realization that Alice was the complete opposite of what he expected from a princess. He had met a few in his travels, and Charlotte had been one of the more aggressive ones. But Alice's attitude made even Anna appear meek. Next, Nathan twigged to the fact that Alice had been negotiating with Falmir. That explained why Leopold had been concerned that Nathan knew about her. The Emperor had few people he could trust with something so important, and his granddaughter was his secret weapon. Furthermore, Nathan knew that Alice was close friends with Princess Charlotte of Falmir. Finally, Nathan's face paled and his eyes widened as the other name sank in.
"Nerevia?" he croaked out.
Alice tilted her head, placing it in a white-gloved hand.
"She's my personal bodyguard while I'm the appointed ambassador to Falmir. I left her with the carriages to oversee the unpacking, although I did see a champion come out to greet her, a monogem cat beastkin with a sapphire. One of yours?"
Nathan ran a hand down his face and held back a groan. Today was rapidly worsening.
"Is something wrong?" Alice asked, confused.
"Nerevia's one of Tarban's duo gem champions," Leopold said, his tone flat. "I would have preferred that you didn't bring her here."
Alice blinked. Oh, my apologies, Nathan. I forgot that there may be some issues between you and anybody under your father. But Nerevia's fantastic. Surely you won't have any problems with her."
She smiled beatifically.
"Seraph, could you please head out to the courtyard?" Nathan ground out, now that he had regained his senses. "Prevent any fights breaking out for any reason, between anyone."
Seraph stared at him, then lowered her cup. She rose and swiftly left the room, albeit with her usual grace. Alice said. Her smile frizzled.
"I don't think things will go that poorly," Leopold said. "I've spent quite a few years around Nerevia,
I know exactly what's happening between her and Faye right now.
Nathan tried not to imagine the catfight building up outside, and whether any weapons had been drawn.
Leopold continued, undeterred. In any case, you should let the servants escort you to a room. We can talk about what you're here for later.
Don't you dare, Alice said. I brought Charlotte here, and I'm still an appointed diplomat by Grandpa. I outrank you.
I'm a bastion. You do not, Leopold said. And I believe I heard something quite ridiculous.
I do. I am both Imperial Princess and a diplomat appointed by His Majesty Emperor Gortal. You're negotiating with a foreign power. Therefore, it is within my authority to tell you to let me help.
Alice grinned. Silence fell. The servants looked at each other, and a few ducked out of the room, presumably to bring more food and drink, and probably the best they could find on short notice. Meanwhile, Nathan tried to right himself. Charlotte was here. That's what Alice had said. This was an opportunity that Nathan had thought would take years. Scratching his cheek, Leopold sighed.
Very well, but you will accept my directions when it comes to your safety. I will send you back to the capital at a moment's notice if you put a toe out of line and put yourself in danger. The Federation is an enemy, unlike the Kingdom of Falmir.
Alice nodded dutifully, then bounced to the far side of the table. She gave Narime a curtsy, although the effect was muted by her clothing.
It's a pleasure to meet you. I am Princess Alice, the minx said, pretending that Narime hadn't watched her force her way into the meeting. It's a delight to meet a mystic fox for the first time, and especially one as experienced as you. I hope it's not impolite to say that your tails look astoundingly luxurious. You must take intricate care of them.
Narime allowed herself a small smile, but Nathan could tell she was trying not to laugh.
Thank you, Your Highness.
Alice's smile waned, but Narime continued.
I am not one for formalities, so I am happy to call you Alice, if you'd prefer.
That would be delightful, Alice said.
Leopold glared at the princess, who ignored him.
Your Imperial Highness?
Uncle, please, can you just call me Alice, like you do normally? You call Grandpa by his name.
Need I remind you that Lady Narime is from a foreign power, and it would be greatly remiss of me not to pay you the required respects of your position, Leopold said, undeterred. I always pay His Majesty the same courtesy in public.
How stuffy, Alice said.
You're in a very stuffy room, Narime said,
and dealing with a very stuffy situation. High Lord Tanius won't be interested in giving you either respect or friendship.
Alice frowned and took a seat. Nathan's seat, in fact. A wolf girl swept in and poured her a cup of coffee, then froze when the princess shot her a thankful smile. Even the beastkin were affected by royalty, apparently. Then again, most of them had never imagined they would get within 100 miles of a member of the Imperial family.
I know how to play the role of Imperial Princess, Alice said. I just prefer to be more personal. Things get done a lot faster when people aren't hiding behind rank and hierarchy. When half the words out of somebody's mouth are blather to appease others, instead of anything of substance, meetings tend to accomplish tremendously little. The Diet is the mess it is because of that.
Leopold said nothing. He gestured for Nathan to take a seat next to him, where Seraph had sat. But Nathan had other ideas. He stepped forward and said,
Your Highness, you're thinking about your position the wrong way.
Am I? Alice said. It's hard to believe that when you're ignoring my request to call me by my name.
He ignored her.
Your title and rank are your sword and shield. Your opponents are forced to show deference to you, and you can punch holes in arguments with a single sentence.
Because I'm the princess, not because I'm right, Alice said flatly.
You need to be both when dealing with a foreign power, Nathan said.
Alice's eyes narrowed.
If I tell the Federation that this war is a terrible mistake, They won't pay any attention, because I'm only a bastion. Lady Von Clare had the same issue. They only listened because Archduke von Milgar supported her, with Nadime's backing within the Federation.
Nathan paused, waiting for Alice to acknowledge what he meant. She nodded after a few seconds.
He continued, "But if we show up and say nonsense, it won't matter. The Federation is a sovereign nation. They can do whatever they want. Your position gets a foot in the door. But in the end, it's your words that must convince them. It's different in the Diet, but there's a reason the Emperor didn't send any random noble off to negotiate with Falmir."
"You sound like Grandpa," Alice said, although her expression was relaxed. "Both of them. But I've never heard it described as a sword and shield. I suppose that's the sort of thing that comes from a soldier."
Leopold gave Nathan an odd look and gestured for him to take a seat again. This time, he followed the direction.
"It's not my analogy," Nathan admitted. "An old friend taught it to me."
An old friend who knew nothing about Nathan right now. Nathan was borrowing a lot of Gareth's techniques and wisdom. Alice looked thoughtfully at Nathan for a few seconds, a finger on her lips. Then she shrugged. They began to update her on the current situation. Midway through, the door burst open again. A buxom dark elf burst in, wearing far too little for safe combat. A hand gripped the elf's shoulder, and she winced.
"What did I say earlier?" Seraph said darkly.
"Fuck," Nerevia began to say, before spotting Alice and cutting herself off.
"I never agreed to that."
"You've tried to pick more fights with Nathan's champions than I did when I was his enemy," Seraph said. "Do so again, and I won't ask nicely."
Nerevia glared at Seraph, and the olive-skinned champion glared back. It almost seemed that lightning crackled between them. Nerevia looked exactly as Nathan remembered her, and it didn't matter if he was using his implanted memories or those from his original timeline. Dark elves stopped aging as an adult and lived for up to 200 years. Nerevia had never admitted how old she was, but Nathan suspected she was relatively young. But that still meant she was older than Nathan, even if she didn't look a day older than 20. She wore a black cloak, a leather vest that showed off her significant cleavage, and left most of her torso uncovered, a pair of black hot pants, and knee-high leather boots. A terrible outfit for a champion who wanted to protect themselves, but perfect for Nerevia.
Is there a problem?" Alice asked, her eyes flicking between the two champions.
"Nope," Nerevia said. She sashayed over to Alice's side, her eyes locked onto Nathan.
"There had best not be," Leopold said, "or I will send you back to Bastion Tarban's side."
"Oh, but it's my duty to look after the lost members of my master's family. Right, Nathan?"
Nerevia said with a smirk.
"If I were part of Tarban's family anymore," Nathan said, leaning his face on one hand.
"Oh, has something happened?"
Nerevia's smirk widened.
"Play games all you like, but I don't need to care about them," Nathan said.
Nerevia blinked.
"You're in my domain, and this county is my responsibility. If you harm, or try to harm, any of my champions or anyone under my protection, then there won't be enough of you left for Tarban to denigrate anymore."
The room fell silent. Alice's mouth fell open in shock. Nerevia's smirk vanished, but she didn't glare at Nathan.
"Well, you certainly found your backbone down here. Did somebody implant a steel spine in you at the academy?"
"Enough," Leopold said. "You can handle the von Straub family issues in private, but I will back Bastian Nathan's declaration. You are here to protect Her Imperial Highness. Stray from that direction, and I have reason to allow you to stay."
"Bastion Nathan, huh?" Nerevia muttered. "Well,
I guess the cute little boy had to grow up at some point.
With those words, she retreated to a corner of the room. Seraph watched every step the dark elf took before taking a seat of her own next to Nathan. He noticed the way that Seraph glared at the coffee mugs and ran her fingers over their rims. His hand slipped over her thigh. She looked at him. "Let's have a chat after this," he murmured. She nodded in response. Her hands retreated from the table and instead ran over his fingers. The briefing resumed and finished with little of note happening.
"You mentioned High Lord Tanius earlier, but he's not coming," Alice noted. "I assume that's a problem?"
"A significant problem," Nathan said. "He's the architect of the war. If he's not present at the negotiations, then they're a waste of time."
Alice mouthed a few words to herself before saying, "I think I understand your sword and shield analogy from earlier, Nathan. In other words, I should use my title as a sword to force Tanius out from hiding. He won't be able to ignore an imperial princess without greatly weakening his position in the Federation, will he?"
"Exactly," Nathan said.
Leopold once again gave Nathan an odd look, but remained silent. "I still don't quite know how I use it as a shield. I guess I can practice that part," Alice said. "I've never negotiated with an enemy before."
Nadime stared at Alice in disbelief.
"You haven't?"
"Should I have?" Alice tilted her head. Given she had barged into this meeting and forced everybody to accept her as the chief diplomat, Nathan imagined some assumptions had been made. Whatever the case, Princess Alice now led the negotiations. Nathan now had a tool to force Tanius out from hiding, even if he knew nothing about that tool. And he also had another princess he wanted to meet.
Seraph's fingers ran along his wrist as the meeting ended, and Nathan's mind returned to the present. First, he needed to deal with the current problem. Chapter 12.
Nuravia winked at Nathan as he stepped out of the meeting room. He gave her a bland look and tugged Seraph out by her hand. Behind him, he trusted Leopold to keep things under control. The elderly Bastion cared deeply for Alice, from both political and personal perspectives. He was Uncle Leopold to Alice, and Nathan doubted there was anyone else in Domar who called him by such an affectionate name. Unless one of Leopold's champions was kinkier than he realized. Nathan didn't know them very well, as they kept a low profile when visiting. At the very least, Nathan doubted that Nuravia would pull anything. There was no love lost between the Dark Elf and Tarban. Nuravia might be one of his father's champions, but the reasons were complicated. Well, not complicated. Mostly just odd. Nuravia was a twisted woman. There was no other way to describe a woman who willingly served a man who hated her. Tarban despised non-humans, and dark elves were no exception. The reason Nathan had been disowned by his family was because he was too friendly with the Beastkin under his rule. Even now, he suspected a lot of his father's hatred for him was because of his actions. A Beastkin champion, open support for Beastkin soldiers and knights, siding with Leopold and Emperor Gortal, who had ended slavery in the Empire. Despite that, Nuravia was Tarban's willing puppet. Things had changed in Nathan's timeline, but his implanted memories of her from this timeline were far from positive. He had faded scars on his back from her treatment of him. Nobody commented on them, as scars were common for many. Faye had more than a few that he never remarked on, most likely from hunts that had gone wrong. Commenting on someone's scars was simply not done, given everybody knew that life was harsh. But everyone remembered what caused their scars, and although the implanted memories weren't truly his, they still affected him. It probably didn't help that Nuravia had never been his favorite champion.
That expression of yours suggests that you don't like her either,
Seraph muttered as they walked up a staircase to his office.
I have a lot of history with her, Nathan said.
She's a bitch, Seraph said. I'm amazed that somebody who hates non-humans as much as your father can stand somebody like her.
Really? I'd argue that he puts up with her because of that, he replied. After all, what better way to show your superiority than to put somebody like Nerevia in their place?
Seraph fell silent, her expression darkening. As they reached Nathan's office, she spoke again.
She's a duo-gem champion, and a little too spunky to simply take that sort of thing. There's something else, isn't there?
Let's just say that you're seeing a very different side of her than she shows to Tarbin, Nathan said, grimacing.
And does she want that from you?
Seraph asked. Nathan looked at her in surprise. Her expression was serious.
She hates me, Nathan said. I am everything that my father isn't.
You were, maybe, Seraph smirked. She seemed shocked when you threatened her. Was that a first?
It was, at least in this timeline.
Even if Seraph had a point, Nathan had no reason to pursue it. Nerevia belonged to Tarbin, and laying hands on another Bastion's champion was both incredibly insulting and dangerous. Tarbin could use it as an excuse to challenge him to a duel, or even have him removed as Bastion if he had the political support. One day, Tarbin might cease to be a problem, or he might need to be tackled head-on. But until then, Nerevia could taunt, tease, and be as annoying as she liked. Nathan pushed the door to his office open after unlocking it, and a squeak came from within it. A guilty cat girl looked up from where she was sitting in his seat, her fingers firmly ensconced in her pants.
This isn't what I meant by calming down, Seraph said grumpily.
She pushed past Nathan and pulled Faye from the chair. Faye stared at the ground despondently while Seraph tidied her up.
Is the medication not working? Nathan asked.
It had been a few nights since she had first intruded on him, and she had seemed normal when she had been interested in playtime.
It is, but...
Faye trailed off and wouldn't look Nathan in the eye.
Medication? Seraph asked.
Nathan closed the office door.
She's rutting. The medication should allow her to act normally, but this doesn't look normal.
Can't say I'm much of a beastkin expert, Seraph shrugged. But things got rather nasty by the time I arrived. Nerevia was hurling insults about you and saying a lot of things that would be unwise to say to your host. But as Faye got more and more riled up, I'd say the bitch's words became more abusive, and she was laser-focused on you.
Yeah, that was the sort of thing that went down poorly when a beastkin was in the middle of their rotting.
Both genders of beastkin rutted. Most thought that male beastkin were the most dangerous, as they became extremely protective of the woman they chose, even when taking the medication. In truth, female beastkin were just as violently protective. Nerevia knew this and had been provoking Faye. Without the medication, Faye would have tried to murder Nerevia on the spot.
It's fine, Faye, Nathan said.
I'm supposed to be your champion, aren't I? How can I be if I can't control myself? Faye said, eyes on the verge of tears.
You're still my champion, and you controlled yourself better than my father's champion.
Nathan frowned when Faye didn't react. He gripped her chin.
Look at me. A duo-gem champion broke countless rules of civility and tried to start a fight. You held back. That makes you better than her, even though she is a duo-gem. I can't ask for anything more.
Faye sobbed and held out her arms. Nathan pulled her into his embrace and let her nuzzle her face against his chest. She alternated between sobs and purrs, her bushy tail swishing erratically behind her. After a long minute, Faye settled down but didn't leave Nathan's arms. By now, her scent from earlier had crept into his nose, but he ignored it. He needed to handle Seraph before he did anything with his cat.
"Was there anything else?"
Nathan asked Seraph, running a hand through Faye's hair.
"She knew that I was from the Federation, and had some choice words," Seraph said.
She shrugged.
"They didn't really bite, but I'll admit that I don't appreciate being a weak link."
"You're not." Seraph gave him a sardonic smile, as if to say that he didn't need to give her empty words.
"I mean it," Nathan said. "I don't give a damn what Tarbin and his nationalist douchebags plan to do."
He paused.
"No, I do, but I don't care about their political moves. You've more than proven your loyalty and ability as my champion. If I can't handle some political nonsense from my half-baked bastion of a father, then I don't deserve to be a bastion at all."
Seraph snorted, then let out raucous peals of laughter.
"You're always so over the top, although I can appreciate it. I still remember you offering me atonement with a straight face, as if you were some sort of holy knight."
"I am a bastion."
"It's been centuries since anybody has really thought of bastions as the swords of the goddess."
Seraph smiled at him, but it was a gentle smile.
"You're oddly genuine about things. I suppose that's what separates you from Tanius, even if you are scheming and manipulating your way toward a long-term goal. I at least know you haven't lost your way. But I will say one thing."
Nathan waited patiently to hear it, but she didn't speak. Faye peeked out from his chest and looked at Seraph with wide eyes, her cat ears pricked upward in anticipation.
"Do you have to do this every time?" Nathan asked.
"Oh, so you are interested?" Seraph said.
She smirked, then leaned inward.
"If every bastion was held to your standard, then we wouldn't have many bastions on Dormar. So maybe don't go around saying that you don't deserve to be a bastion, I'd rather a slightly lesser Nathan than a thousand Fierces or Tarbins."
With those words, Seraph ducked in and pecked Nathan on the cheek. Her hand slipped between him and Faye and rubbed along his already hardened cock. She grinned. Seraph gave Nathan a wink and sashayed out of his office, her figure hugging Chang Sam, helping her curves stick out. The door slammed shut after her. Nathan stared at it for several seconds. Then a certain cat girl bit him, and he yelped.
"Nathan," Faye whined.
She had lowered her uniform, revealing her crotch.
"I know I'm on the medication, but..."
Her eyes glazed over, and the room flooded with her scent. Her legs were slick with her juices, and her lower lips called for his personal attention.
"Just this once," Nathan said. "You need to control it a bit better if you want to come to the negotiations."
"Of course," Faye purred,
before her moans of pleasure filled the office. Chapter 13. Nathan found himself intensely frustrated on the ride to the negotiations. It wasn't due to any issues with the negotiations themselves, or even due to Nerevia's constant needling. The last time the Dark Elf had tried to publicly insult him, Faye had tripped her, and she had ended up covered in Faye's dinner. Gravy and sausages had poured down Nerevia's open top in the aftermath. Nathan couldn't even complain about his sex life, although it had changed due to necessity. It only took one close encounter with Alice to ban his champions from getting handsy in his office. The princess liked to barge in on him unannounced, and a closed door meant nothing. Neither did a locked door, and it was how Nathan learned that the princess was a talented magic user. He didn't use a strong lock, but the sight of the princess blowing the lock open shocked him, nonetheless. Not as much as it shocked Sen, who had been about to slip under his desk. No, the source of Nathan's frustrations wasn't even coming to the negotiations. Her name was Charlotte, and she had been hiding away in his fortress without letting anybody see her except Alice. If he didn't know better, he'd think she wasn't there. Nathan only got the occasional whiff of the perfume she always wore in a hallway, or saw the duo gem champion from Falmir outside her quarters. Without any way to change that, Nathan piled into a carriage with Anna, Faye, and Narime. Leopold traveled with Alice, Seraph, and Nerevia. Remaining behind were Sen and one of Leopold's duo gem champions, as well as Princess Charlotte and her bodyguard. The risk of an assault on Garrick Pass was too high to leave it undefended, even if Alice's safety was the priority. Sunstorm and Vera would meet them at the meeting location. As part of her mission, Sunstorm had been traveling back and forth from the frontier and Garrick Pass using the gateway in Fort Tobram. A decision had been made not to use it for this journey for strategic reasons. Namely, Nathan didn't want Nerevia or Narime knowing he had it. Besides, it was late enough in winter that Garrick Pass had begun to clear up from snow and ice. The pass was low enough and received enough sunlight during the day that it was now safe to send carriages through with spotters, although Nathan wouldn't be sending any companies of soldiers through anytime soon. "So, you're Anna von Clare," Faye said, her tone obviously confused. "Nathan's father is Tarbin von Straub, but Nathan is Nathan Straub, and the princess is Alice Arengar." Faye made a face. "I don't get it. Aren't you all nobles?"
"We're not all landed nobles," Anna said, "and it is confusing. An edict was passed by the Emperor a few centuries ago that standardized how nobiliary particles are used, because it got a bit ridiculous. But it also made it rather complicated."
"It's not that bad," Nathan said. "The Vaughn means that the person is either the holder of the title, a child of the holder, or a child of the heir to the title." Faye stared at Nathan in frustration. He sighed in response. "Look, let's use Anna as an example," he explained. "Imagine her father is still alive. He would be Von Clare, and so would Anna and her younger brother. That's because her father holds the noble title to the county, and Anna and her brother are his children. Follow?" Faye nodded. So did Narime, surprisingly. "Imagine that Anna and her brother have children," Nathan said. Faye's eyes widened, and she looked at Anna, who scowled at Nathan. "I said imagine." Faye giggled. Nathan continued. "Anna's children will be Von Clare as well, because she is the eldest child and the family heir. But her brother's children will only be Clare, even though their father is a Von Clare, because they don't have a direct right of inheritance. A lot of people need to die before they can inherit the family estate, after all."
"It used to be simpler," Anna said. "Everybody was a Von if they were part of a noble family. But it also resulted in people padding their surnames to appear special. The formal term for it is that the full noble name is inherited by primogeniture, with an exception for siblings."
"So why is the princess just Arengar, then? Isn't she going to become emperor?" Faye asked innocently.
Nathan ran a hand over his face as Narime grinned. Rolling her eyes, Anna said,
"The emperor is elected. You can't inherit the name. She doesn't have a Vaughn because her mother married out of family and took on their name. So she lost her right of inheritance to her family estate. But Alice is still an imperial princess, so she's required to use her grandfather's surname while she remains unmarried."
"Oh," Faye nodded, as if that explained everything. "Who is she going to marry?"
"Nathan, probably," Anna quipped, giving him a sidelong look.
"No," he said.
"She barged into your office an average of twice per day by my count, and she refuses to hold meetings unless you're present."
Anna's face was unamused. Nathan shifted uncomfortably at the stares from the three women. "I didn't know that last part," he muttered.
I feel Leopold's caught between his desire to be an overprotective uncle and his joy that his adoptive niece has a crush, Anna said. Then she shrugged. But really, I doubt she's thinking of marriage. It's hard to say what she's thinking of. Her position is so ridiculously complicated that it makes my problems look like a joke.
You're talking about her mother, Narime said.
So, she was aware of Alice's family situation.
What about her? Faye asked. Is she...
Her eyes widened. There's nothing wrong with her, Nathan said. But she's in a political marriage. Anna would know. I'm guessing you had tea with Alice's mother when the Archduke called you to a private meeting during the Diet. Anna said, looking out the window.
I met Alice's parents without thinking much of it at the time. I was mostly trying not to freeze up while being surrounded by some of the wealthiest and most powerful people in the Empire. Now I've spent hours and hours talking nonsense and other girly topics with an imperial princess and the granddaughter of my liege.
The carriage trundled on. It broke free of the icy pass, and the landscape opened up. Although it looked as barren as it did on the other side of the pass, it had been a harsh winter, even if it was warming up quickly. He hoped that didn't signal a poor harvest season.
Eh? What? Faye said, as Anna's words sunk in. Isn't your liege Archduke von Milgar?
Anna smirked at Faye. Yes, that's exactly right. Alice is the granddaughter of both the Emperor and an Archduke.
Faye's tails and ears shot high enough to nearly touch the roof of the carriage. She tried to say something, but her mouth only opened and closed uselessly. Her ears flapped against her head like wings. Calm down, Nathan said. Like we said, it's complicated. For one thing, she may be the eldest child, but her father still needs to take over the Archduchy first. It will be 30 years or more before she has a chance to become Archduchess. Nodding, Anna added,
what is a problem is that she is technically forbidden from becoming Empress.
Both Narime's and Faye's eyes widened. 7 separate tales froze as both women processed Anna's words, and their minds came up empty regarding why she had said them. The Imperial Constitution forbids anybody with the right to a duchy or archduchy from being nominated for emperor, Nathan explained. It's a way to prevent any one person from taking over the entire empire. If an archduke took control of the Imperial army, he could crush the other archdukes with ease and install himself as a dictator. As such, although Alice is the Emperor's favored heir by many, she's not actually allowed to become Empress. Which was a shame in Nathan's mind. He hadn't known the princess for long, but Alice reminded him a lot of Charlotte. Forthright, decisive, brave, and she cared about her nation. Nathan didn't really care about the Empire as a whole, but he cared about the people in it. His last years in Falmere had embittered him toward his homeland, but he had already grown fond of many people he had met here. Not that it was personal. It had been politics that ruined Falmere for him, and similar politics threatened to destroy the empire. The difference was that he had no intention of letting people like Tarbin get their way, and he had the knowledge and power to stop them now. Alice felt like a kindred spirit, but the fact she couldn't take the throne limited his ability to do much in the Empire in the long run. Falmere was different because of Charlotte. Nathan could change things there. After a long trip, the carriages arrived at Fort Tobram. This was for a rest stop, and the second leg of the journey took place the next day. Alice kept Leopold and Nathan up all night, going over her notes, speeches, and peppering them with questions about contingency plans. By the time Nathan stumbled back to his room, it was only an hour from dawn. Faye was nice enough to cuddle up to him and let him nap on her soft pillows while she stroked his hair. Then, only an hour or two later, he was back in the carriage. This trip was much shorter. They arrived before midday.
You look like death,
Sunstorm greeted him when he arrived. Her onyx gem shined in the midday sun, and her black imperial uniform caused her to stick out. Nathan wasn't concerned about her visibility. Her gem abilities meant that she could disappear at a moment's notice, however. Her short, spiky black hair showed clear signs of being cut with a sword, probably this morning. Her olive skin gleamed with sweat, and Nathan guessed she had been working out while waiting for them to arrive. Sunstorm exercised for fun. Her other idea of fun was killing people, and the curved short swords at her hips weren't for decoration. If there was one thing Sunstorm disliked about working for Nathan, it was that he hadn't asked her to assassinate anybody yet. With Seraph's help, she had managed to recover her collection of magically preserved heads from her hideout in the Federation, and Nathan pretended he was unaware of its existence. But he knew that Sunstorm wanted to expand it, and she sorely wanted his appreciation for killing his enemies. Like Seraph and Narime, Sunstorm was from the Kurai Peninsula. Unlike them, Sunstorm had fled her homeland as a child rather than an adult. She was from the same part of the peninsula as Seraph. The differences in skin color and overall appearance between her and Narime were sharply apparent when they stood next to each other like they were now.
"He hasn't had much sleep," Anna said. "There are more tents than I expected."
The meeting ground for the negotiation was an open clearing close to the new border between the Empire and the Federation. There was nothing to see for miles, other than a small village. Any border forts were well out of sight, which made it much harder for either side to station troops for an ambush. Sunstorm had already chased away a few companies that the Federation had tried to sneak close. So far, they hadn't tried anything new. Because there had been nothing here, everything had to be built from scratch. Pavilions had been erected, wells dug, weatherproof warehouses for supplies constructed, and food and drink carted in over the past few weeks. The fabric of each pavilion was colored to match the nation intended to use it, with the Empire using white and black tents, and the Federation white and orange tents. In the center was a solid white pavilion, and it was much smaller than those intended for accommodation or dining. No other structures had been erected within several hundred meters. Negotiations would be held there, well out of bowshot. An invisible magical barrier protected the pavilion from any magical attacks, although a keen eye would spot the occasional sparkle in the air.
"Word arrived at the last minute that some representatives had changed," Sunstorm shrugged. "They're bringing more soldiers. I coordinated with Seraph, and we brought up more soldiers of our own, and Faye's knights. There hasn't been any real trouble. Some big burly folks tried to cause some trouble last night, but they backed down fast after their captain was put in the dirt by a wolf girl."
"Normally, that would cause a big brawl," Nathan pointed out.
"Not when said wolf girl rips his armor off and crushes it in her bare hands."
Touché. Nathan was concerned by the change in representatives. An increased number of soldiers made things more volatile, and he worried this was a convenient excuse to prepare for an assault. Tanius had agreed to come after Alice became involved, but nobody trusted him. A small crowd formed outside the central pavilion. The negotiations weren't scheduled to start for over 2 more hours, given the first day was intended to be a lighter session after everybody had traveled there. That made it odd for so many to be crowding the tent, even if the Federation wasn't intruding on the clearance zone. Nathan signaled to Leopold behind him, who nodded in affirmation. With only a few words, the older Bastion redirected Alice toward the Imperial tents. She could take a brief tour and see where she was staying tonight, before joining Nathan at the central pavilion.
"Those are the burly folks," Sunstorm said, pointing at a dozen heavily armored Federation knights near the pavilion.
"An elite unit, maybe," Nathan said. He walked toward them, feeling exposed as he stepped into the empty clearing that separated the central pavilion and the rest of the tents. Hundreds of eyes locked onto him, even though he couldn't see them.
"They're King George's personal guard," Narime said.
She remained close to Nathan and tried to put Faye between herself and the Federation side of the encampment.
Even if I didn't recognize several of them, I'd know because they're infamous.
Infamously bad? Sunstorm said.
They're hulking brutes with a nasty reputation wherever they go. George usually has to cover up whatever damage they cause when he travels in person for the Regency Council.
Narime's lips thinned.
I can guess why they were causing trouble with Faye's knights.
The fury in Narime's eyes told Nathan everything he needed to know about what sort of damage was being covered up. And it wasn't property damage. No, Nathan realized. In the Federation, it probably did count as property damage. But the Empire felt differently.
Leopold will flip if I let them get close to Alice, Nathan muttered. Let's chase them off.
George won't like that, Narime said.
I don't even remember any of the regents agreeing to come other than Tanius and Duke Darius, Nathan said. I'm not letting his chubby ass ruin things or his useless guards try to assault the princess.
The guards leered at them as they approached. Well, leered at the women in the group. They didn't care whether they were mentally undressing Anna, Narime, Faye, or Sunstorm. Given how openly crude they were being, Nathan wasted no time in shooing them back to the Federation tents.
You can't do this to us, one of them grunted. We're King George's—
I don't care, Nathan said.
You could be the goddess's chosen ones, and I would be telling you to fuck off. Consider this a favor, because if you don't leave now, you'll be going back to your tents in pieces.
The guards bared their teeth for a moment, their hands going to their weapons. A moment later, they froze. Four gems glowed simultaneously. Faye's hands even flared with blue flames for an instant. Realizing how outmatched they were, the hulking brutes sauntered off.
Faye, could you go get some of your knights? Nathan asked. Only a few of them.
Where are they? She asked.
Sunstorm, go with her. But I need you to handpick those who will behave themselves. The Federation won't be bringing beastkin, so if necessary, I'd like some knights who can manhandle any idiots that are brought along.
Nathan sighed, running a hand through his hair. The two champions trotted off. A moment later, Nathan realized he had sent off both of his champions and was now alone with Narime and Anna. The noblewoman stared nervously at Narime, fingering her necklace. She smiled nervously at Nathan. In his haste, he'd forgotten that Narime wasn't his champion, but one of the Federation's. But he still had his strength as a bastion, even this far from his binding stones. And it wasn't as though his champions were that far away. For her part, Narime either didn't notice that she now had a golden opportunity to assassinate Nathan and Anna, or she ignored it.
Shall we?
Narime suggested, gesturing for them to enter the central pavilion. Now that the brutes were gone, the servants and guards posted here filtered back outside and resumed their posts. Nathan and company stepped past them and entered the tent. A massive oaken round table filled the center of the tent, surrounded by chairs of all makes and sizes. Platters of food lined tables along the edges, and kegs of ale had been set up for easy access to alcohol. Given the sensitive nature of the discussions, the servants wouldn't be present, so it was expected that most guests would get their own food and drink. Although Nathan imagined that some attendees would be served by their champions, if they had any present, he sincerely doubted that Tanius would be pouring his own tankards. The food wasn't anything special. Winter still made it difficult to provide fresh or high-quality food. The platters were mostly of cold cuts and salted fish. Preserved vegetables such as pickled onions, brined olives, and sauerkraut were served alongside fresh produce such as peas and lentils. Two large pots contained an onion soup and a bean broth soup, kept hot using a fire enchantment, although Nathan knew their quality would pale in comparison to freshly prepared soups. Next to the soups were baskets full of small loaves of crusty bread. Despite the relatively poor quality of the food, one man happily helped himself to plenty of it. He loaded up a plate with a tower of salted ham and fish, piles of vegetables, and then stacked two small loaves of bread on top. Back at the table, he already had a plate full of food, plus two bowls of soup. A decorated pewter beer stein sat next to the food. Nathan noted that the stein used the old measurement, which was to say that it was roughly twice the size of the tankards being provided.
"That's George, isn't it?" Nathan asked. The man was large, and Nathan doubted he could be anyone else.
Narime nodded and waited for Nathan to step forward. She seemed unwilling to engage with the Federation for some reason. Suddenly, George spotted them. His bushy eyebrows shot up into his thick mop of ginger hair at the sight of them. He placed his second plate down at his seat and gave the three of them an ostentatious bow. George wore an outfit that was probably elegant and in fashion sometime before Nathan was born. Maybe even before Nathan's father was born. It was garishly bright and consisted of a ruffled silk shirt.